Hello, knowledge seekers. In this episode of 20 Minute Books, we delve into The Refusal of Work by David Frayne, a seminal exploration of our society's deep-rooted work culture. Published in 2015, this book challenges the notion that the conventional 40-hour workweek is the sole pathway to acquiring necessities like income, social acceptance, and a sense of belonging. With many individuals finding themselves exhausted, irritable, and physically unwell from their jobs, Frayne questions whether this should remain the status quo. The refusal of work is not merely a critique, it is a beacon for those seeking alternatives. Through engaging with critical theory and practical examples, including interviews with individuals who have either reduced their working hours or quit working altogether, Frayne offers insight into the possibilities of resisting societal work expectations. David Frayne, a lecturer and social researcher at Cardiff University, brings to this book his extensive research on consumer culture, the sociology of happiness, alternative education, and radical perspectives on work. Hailing from South Wales, this notable book marks his entry into the literary world. This episode is for anyone who daydreams of entrepreneurial pursuits or career changes during long workdays, for those who long for the time management freedom they once enjoyed in university, or for workers who find Sunday scaries more than just a quirky phrase but a daunting reality of their work-life imbalance. Join us as we uncover the layers of the refusal of work and explore what lies beyond the structured confines of conventional employment. The Refusal of Work, The Theory and Practice of Resistance to Work. Introduction, Rethinking Work, A Journey Toward Meaningful Lives. Did you ever pause to wonder what childhood dreams about future careers tell us about society's values? That common question we pose to children, what do you want to be when you grow up, isn't just a probing into their little imaginations. It subtly instills the notion that one's identity is inextricably linked to their occupation, emphasizing a work-centric model of existence. This model suggests that key elements of a fulfilled life, such as financial stability, social recognition, and community, are primarily accessed through work. However, this model is increasingly proving to be ill-suited for many. For individuals in high status roles, the reality can be a relentless cycle of long hours, with the scant leisure time overshadowed by the anticipation of more work, affecting their sleep and family life. Conversely, those in lower wage jobs often face an incessant battle with financial uncertainty, always on the edge about whether they'll manage to cover their basic needs. This narrative brings to light discussions from leading thinkers on the evolution of work and the emergence of our work-centered culture. It introduces us to individuals who are pushing back against the norm, refusing to let their jobs define their entire existence. What if there was a different way to conceptually and practically approach work? Imagine a framework where work is designed to be more equitable, fulfilling, and genuinely rewarding for all involved. Among the intriguing insights you will encounter here is economist John Maynard Keynes's foresight that technological advancements and productivity improvements might lead to a future where people would only need to work 15 hours a week by 2030. Another compelling case is that of a Fortune 500 company employee who carries an empty briefcase around, symbolizing the performative aspects of work in corporate culture. Perhaps most striking is the story of Samantha, a highly qualified patent attorney with a PhD, who chose to leave her demanding career to embrace the simplicity and autonomy of working part-time as a waitress. This journey offers a critical evaluation of our current work paradigms and paints a picture of what shifting away from a work-centric existence towards more meaningful engagements could look like. It challenges us to reimagine the role of work in our lives, proposing a future where work serves humanity, not the other way around. Part 1. The Work Trap. How modern society's obsession with work benefits. None imagine for a moment reaching that rare state of complete immersion in a task. It's that feeling when everything clicks, you're skilled at the work, genuinely interested, and time just seems to dissolve. This, the peak of productive exhilaration, is what work can be at its very best. But alas, this ideal is often far from the daily grind most of us experience. More often than not, work feels less like a fulfilling venture and more like a soul-crushing ordeal. For many, even outside physically demanding fields, work is a mental marathon, leaving individuals so depleted by day's end that mindlessly staring at a screen is all the evening holds. Key to understanding our modern predicament is recognizing that modern capitalist societies have made fulfilling employment a scarce commodity. Most jobs are monotonous, unfulfilling, and feel utterly meaningless. This situation prompts a critical question. If work can be so dire, why is society pressing for more? The crux of the matter is that work has become the central pillar of modern life, though not to our collective benefit. Work is ostensibly the mechanism for distributing wealth, enabling access to necessities like food and shelter. However, the implications are far-reaching and troubling. Our very identities, social standing, and community ties are intricately linked to our employment status. With the diminishing of social services in the latter part of the 20th century, even access to essential services like healthcare and retirement savings has become dependent on our jobs. Reflecting on history, we see a stark contrast. Sociologist Max Weber observed that, in what he termed traditional or pre-industrial societies, the emphasis was on leisure, not on amassing wealth. Back then, if a worker was offered a raise, the allure was working less for the same pay, a calculation driven purely by the essentials of living. Fast forward to today, and the narrative has flipped. Now, a raise incites excitement, not for the prospect of more leisure, but for doing the same work for more pay. The modern ethos equates work with the means to consume more, thereby trapping us in a cycle where increased consumption demands even more work. This was not the future foreseen by thinkers like Karl Marx, who envisioned technology liberating humanity from labor's drudgery, or John Maynard Keynes, who in 1932 predicted a future where the average work week would dwindle to just 15 hours due to productivity gains. Instead, today finds individuals in high-status positions working increasingly longer hours, while those in lower rungs face the predicaments of low pay, insecure employment, or unemployment. In essence, work has deviated far from being a reliable means to earn, to belong, and to secure our rights. With such a stark deviation from its intended purpose, it's high time for society to reevaluate its unwavering commitment to work. Part 2. The Mask of Joy at Work, Navigating Modern Employment's Performance Art. The widespread misconception that Karl Marx despised work could not be further from the truth. Delving into his voluminous writings, such as The Daunting Expanse of Das Kapital, reveals a man passionate about his labor. Marx was far from a critic of work itself. Rather, he celebrated work as a vehicle for self-actualization, seeing it as humanity's means of engaging with and reshaping the world. Marx viewed genuine work as an extension of human potential, a far cry from the drudgery that has become synonymous with industrial and post-industrial labor. This transformation of work from a source of fulfillment to a mere tool for survival is what Marx identified as alienation, a severance of workers from the products of their labor and, by extension, from their own essence. The central idea to grasp here is that, after centuries of growing distant from the true pleasures of work, contemporary workers find themselves in a paradox. They are expected to act as if their work is a source of joy. In the industrial age, the epitome of worker alienation was found in the factory setting. Here, the pursuit of efficiency manifested in the reduction of labor to simplistic, endlessly repetitive tasks. This model reached its zenith with Henry Ford's assembly line, an innovation that maximized productivity at the expense of workers' creativity, autonomy, and connection to the finished product. Workers, dehumanized, were rendered cog-like, their tasks so mechanically repetitive that they mirrored the machines they operated. Fast forward to the present, and the scenery of work has drastically shifted for the majority. Factory lines have given way to office spaces, with modern workers predominantly tethered to their screens. Though the settings have evolved, for many, the monotony and sense of detachment persist. However, a notable departure in today's labor landscape is the performative aspect of work. Success in the contemporary workplace often hinges not on tangible outputs, but on one's ability to visibly embody corporate culture and enthusiasm. Sociological anecdotes recount tales of employees, like the one carrying an empty briefcase for the sake of appearances at a Fortune 500 company, highlighting the performative extremes to which modern workers are sometimes driven. To mask the inherently alienating nature of current-day work, some companies strive to amalgamate work with play. Silicon Valley has become emblematic of this trend, with workplaces decked out in all manners of leisurely accoutrements, from beanbag lounges to free-flowing kombucha. These amenities serve to soften the starkness of the workplace, offering a semblance of fun amidst the alienation. In this environment, expressions of individuality, like sporting purple hair or bringing one's surfboard to work, are not only tolerated but encouraged. The catch, however, is that this individuality is welcome, as long as it aligns with being perpetually upbeat and industrious. Modern workers are beckoned to embrace their true selves, provided these selves are upbeat, always on, and wholly aligned with their lack of agency at work. Part 3, the endless grasp of work, encroaching on our pursuit of happiness. Reflect for a moment. When exactly does the echo of the workday fade? Is it the moment you step away from your desk? Or perhaps when you finally reach the sanctuary of your home, trying to unwind with a glass of wine? Yet, if thoughts of that afternoon's report or an unexpected late-night email from your boss still manage to invade your peace, can you truly say that work has ended? For too many, work seems to stretch its long shadows far beyond office hours, blurring the lines between professional obligations and personal time. This invasion leads us to an uncomfortable realization. Work has insidiously woven itself into the fabric of our lives, claiming dominion over what we hold most dear. The transformation is most starkly observed in our educational institutions. Education, ideally a lifelong voyage of curiosity and discovery, has been co-opted into a narrow, utilitarian framework aimed squarely at preparing individuals for the workforce. This modern educational mandate stratifies society by levels of employability, effectively serving as a factory for future workers rather than aspiring minds. Beyond the school gates, capitalism's reshaping of community values further entrenches work supremacy, elevating financial gain at the cost of leisure and personal fulfillment. Our relentless consumerism, evidenced by sprawling shopping centers and impulsive online shopping sprees, feeds into this cycle. This continuous quest for more, for the next best thing, locks us in a perpetuating loop of work and consumption. But how did we come to trade our precious time for an ever-growing accumulation of possessions? Advertising, with its roots deepening in the mid-20th century, has masterfully blended psychological tactics to instill a belief that material goods can fulfill our deepest needs for connection, acceptance, and identity. The relentless barrage of advertising ensures we are constantly reminded of what we supposedly lack, suggesting satisfaction is just one purchase away. By the tender age of 18, the average individual in the United States is estimated to have encountered around 350,000 advertisements, a testament to the pervasive nature of this messaging. In this cleverly designed system, the mundane reality of our jobs convinces us we've earned the right to indulge, to treat ourselves with material rewards. Yet, the irony is palpable. In our pursuit of these fleeting pleasures, we are ensnared in the very roles that necessitate such rewards. It's a self-sustaining cycle, meticulously crafted for capitalism's survival, not our happiness. It's clear that work, by commandeering our education, shaping our communities and fueling our consumer habits, has not just occupied our time but has colonized the essence of our lives. In doing so, it challenges us to reconsider what we truly value and how we choose to pursue happiness in the ceaseless shadow of work. Part 4. Challenging Work, a Morality Beyond the Job. Historically, the act of laboring at a job has been framed as an intrinsic moral good, with idleness cast as its immoral counterpart. This perspective has deep roots, shaped significantly by the interests of the privileged classes who profited from keeping workers continuously engaged in their tasks. The underlying fear was not just about profit loss, but a concern that unoccupied workers might engage in activities deemed immoral or even start to organize collectively for better conditions. During the 1920s, as the concept of a shortened 40-hour work week began to emerge, influential figures in business wasted no time in championing the moral value of work. The sentiment was clear. To aspire for reduced hours was viewed as a betrayal of societal duties. Statements like that of George Markland, chairman of Philadelphia Gearworks, who criticized those advocating for a shorter work week, encapsulated this ethos, equating the demand for more leisure time with a lack of patriotism. In today's society, the narrative perseveres that employment is synonymous with moral uprightness, while unemployment is often vilified, casting those without jobs into unworthy or lazy categories. Political rhetoric has reinforced this division, praising the virtue of hardworking people while stigmatizing those in receipt of welfare benefits as idle dependents. This dichotomy not only oversimplifies the complexities of employment and societal contribution, but also obscures the structural issues underlying unemployment and poverty. Yet, this polarized view of work overlooks a rich history of resistance and critique concerning the ethics of labor. The struggle to redefine and resist the normative expectations of work is as old as work itself. From the violent confrontations between workers and capitalists in the 1860s over working hours, to the Beat Generation's romanticization of a life untethered from traditional employment, history is replete with movements that question the sanctity of paid labor. The 1950s Beat movement in particular championed a lifestyle detached from the conventional obligations of work, celebrating the freedoms of the enlightened drifter and producing influential figures like Jack Kerouac and Bob Dylan. The 1970s witnessed second-wave feminists challenging the notion that women's liberation could be equated simply with their entry into the workforce, prompting deeper inquiries into the true nature of liberation and equality. This long-standing dialogue around the value and ethics of work suggests that the current consensus, that employment is the sole moral pathway, deserves rigorous examination and challenge. The history of work resistance underscores the possibility of envisioning a society where value and morality are not exclusively tied to paid labor, opening the door for more nuanced understandings of contribution, community, and fulfillment. Part 5. Seeking Fulfillment Beyond the Grind: The Untold Stories of Work Resistance. Often, society paints the unemployed with a broad brush, attributing their lack of employment to personal failings or a uniform lack of ambition. However, the reasons people find themselves outside the conventional workforce are as diverse as the individuals themselves. David Frayne, in his quest to understand the motivations behind those who choose to step away from the traditional work paradigm, engaged with a myriad of personalities. These individuals, each with their unique narrative, shared a common thread. Their resistance to the conventional work life was not born out of laziness, but from a deeply moral, alternative viewpoint on productivity and fulfillment. The crux of the matter is that those who resist work seek to achieve more from life, not less. Yet, societal judgment looms large over their choices. Frayne's interactions revealed that his subjects encountered what he refers to as breakpoints, pivotal moments, prompting a profound re-evaluation of their lifestyle and work. These breakpoints often led to a rediscovery of their agency, their ability to actively shape their lives in alignment with their values. Take Larry, for example, a social worker whose job had devolved from fulfilling holistic client interactions to a series of dispassionate administrative tasks. Recognizing the erosion of his job's essence, Larry chose to reduce his working hours, seeking to reclaim some sense of meaning in his work and, by extension, his life. Or consider Samantha, who, despite a prestigious background in genetics and law, found her career as a patent attorney unsatisfying and disconnected from the tangible world. She now relishes her roles as a part-time waitress and tutor, finding joy in real human interactions that her previous job lacked. Contrary to societal expectations, individuals like Larry and Samantha, and the others interviewed by Frayn, found heightened enjoyment in a lifestyle predicated on less work, more life. They spoke of their choices in terms rich with mentions of fulfillment, environmental consciousness, and the invaluable worth of personal connections, illustrating that their lives had gained, not lost, meaning through their unconventional choices. Yet, despite their contentment, justifying their lifestyle choices remains a perennial challenge. The nonchalant query, "What do you do?" can become a source of profound anxiety, reflecting the entrenched societal norms that equate a person's worth with their employment status. This external judgment often mirrors internal conflicts, as these pioneers of work resistance grapple with the ingrained societal stigma that views their choices with skepticism, if not outright disdain. The journey of those who consciously resist the work-centric lifestyle is a testament to the profound search for meaning and fulfillment beyond the confines of traditional employment. Their stories challenge us to reconsider the true sources of happiness and value, revealing that sometimes stepping away from the grind can lead to a richer, more purposeful life. Part 6: Redefining the Value of Work, a Collective Quest. In a world where the vast majority find little love for their jobs, daydreams of candid outbursts at Frank from HR or evenings spent drowning in the escapism of the office are more common than we'd like to admit. These small acts of rebellion, such as the McDonald's employee donning a hidden McShit shirt beneath her uniform, serve as silent protests against the prevailing work culture. They offer a glimpse of personal autonomy in a system that demands unwavering conformity. Yet, as work continues to be the cornerstone of income, rights, and social belonging for many, the path of resistance remains arduous, navigable only by the boldest or the most desperate among us. To forge a future that promises equity, we must shift our collective focus. Central to this vision is the argument that real transformation requires concentrating on collective redistribution rather than simply tweaking individual work-life balance. The contemporary dialogue around work-life balance underscores a profound discontent with the disproportionate role work plays in our lives. However, the popular remedies, like time management seminars and stress coping workshops, mistakenly place the onus on individuals to navigate the burdens of an overwhelming work culture. These interventions fail to contend with the systemic nature of the issue, which transcends individual capacity for self-optimization. Instead, a societal overhaul of how work is understood and organized is necessary, one that champions the redistribution of work to afford everyone the possibility of engaging more freely with their passions and interests. One promising avenue is the societal reduction of work hours, which not only has the potential to alleviate unemployment, but also to bridge the expanding chasm of class division that threatens the fabric of civil societies. By working fewer hours across the board, the door opens to employment opportunities for more individuals. This concept isn't purely theoretical. France's implementation of a 35-hour work week in 2000 and the experiment with 6-hour workdays for city employees in Gothenburg, Sweden, since 2014, provide tangible examples of how reduced work hours can be integrated into the fabric of society without diminishing pay. Additionally, the principle of decoupling work from income presents a radical yet increasingly popular solution. The Basic Income Scheme, a stipend sufficient to cover basic living costs, provided to every adult regardless of employment status, is gaining traction. By ensuring a foundational level of financial security, individuals are empowered to explore and develop their talents, acquire new skills, or contribute to society in non-traditional ways, free from the existential threat of poverty. At its core, the challenge isn't work itself, but the entrenched belief that societal acceptance, status, and the means to live are accessible solely through paid labor. A collective reimagining and restructuring of work hold the promise of a society where fulfillment, dignity, and well-being are universally attainable. Final summary. At the heart of our societal construct lies the pillar of paid labor, a route through which we not only secure our livelihood, but also forge our social identities, gain status, and engage with the wider community. Yet, this foundation is fraught with disparities and dissatisfaction, leading many to question the predominant role work holds in defining our existence, especially as stable, fulfilling employment becomes increasingly elusive for a growing portion of the population. The call to action, then, is a profound one. It's time for a societal re-evaluation of how work is distributed and valued, urging us toward a model that promises not only fairness, but also fulfillment for all individuals. This reimagining of work's place in our lives opens the door to a future where engagement in paid labor is not the sole measure of one's worth or the primary means of accessing fundamental human needs and joys. Thank you for joining me today on this journey of learning and discovery as we explored the insights of another thought-provoking book in our growing library of knowledge. If you've enjoyed our time together, please take a moment to follow our podcast, give us a 5-star rating, and share 20-minute books with other knowledge seekers. Your support truly means a lot. Don't forget to join me again in the next episode, where we will delve into another enriching book. Until then, happy reading and happy listening.